CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore on the Skype Morse code line. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm tired. Stayed up late watching the elections and stuff. I don't know if you heard, but Nate Silver won.
math for the win, man.
What would be the equivalent of going 50 for 50 on states in, like, NBA predictions? Would I just be getting, like, every team record right?
It'd be every team record and then predicting every single playoff matchup, I think, is the way it would go.
That's impressive. I don't even, like, whether you care about politics or not, if you can get 50 for 50 on how the states are going to vote, you're good at your job.
It's true. I would say that's pretty solid. John Hollinger dreams of a day like that.
You were at the Nuggets Pistons game last night, just a bevy of JaVale McGee dunks. The one that was obviously the highlight was he caught the ball basically at the three-point line and just dribbled in uncontested. That's got to be a sight. It's got to look like a giraffe playing basketball in person.
It's kind of like that. It's also kind of Gumby-ish. Like,
yeah.
Gumby, like trotting towards the rim. My favorite part of that was Greg Monroe. He took two steps, started to contest, and was like, no, not today, JaVale. No poster for me. No, thank you. We're already going to lose. No, thanks.
Does it look like he is, Greg Monroe? I mean, this guy's an all-star caliber player, and he is, looks to be on the worst team. I mean, the Pistons are the team right now that everyone's riding their ship against. You know, the Lakers were 0-3, fixed it against the Pistons. The Nuggets are 0-3, fixed against the Pistons. I could just see him having those real, like, dead eyes. Those, I've been gambling for 3 days and I don't know how to pay my mortgage anymore.
You can tell they're aware,
yeah,
of how bad it is. Like, they're not such a young team, or they're not like the Wizards who didn't really, I don't think, care. Like, they're pretty aware of, like, this is not working, this is not good. I commented to him yesterday, like, from a number standpoint, his defense doesn't look bad. I looked at Synergy and watched some stuff. I was like, defense actually looks pretty good. And he, like, shook his head at me and was like, no.
Oh,
He was like, I have a ways to go. Even if it's better, it hasn't been good enough. So, he's going to be frustrated. I think the team's frustrated. I think that they don't really know what to do. It's unfortunate because I think if you buy into Lawrence Frank, there's a lot of good things that can happen, but I think they're having a hard time buying in. And I'll be writing it up today. Lawrence Frank, and there's a thing going on with Rodney Stuckey and Lawrence Frank, because Stuckey came out and talked about how he's playing shooting guard and he was playing backup point, and like he doesn't feel like he's getting, like, essentially it was kind of hinting at touches. And then Lawrence Frank kind of went on a little bit of a rant pregame about how, how about you not worry about touches? How about you go worry about defense? How about you go worry about little things? And, that kind of thing. And then, so I don't know. It's one where I don't know what they have to do to get it right outside of a trade. That's the only thing I can think of, is they needed to move Tayshaun. They needed to not re-sign Tayshaun. Tayshaun did not look good last night. And there's a lot of good things. It's bad because I rag on Tayshaun a lot, but it's not like I think he's a bad player. He's old, but there's a lot of things that he could do really well. I think if he was on a team like New York, he'd be exceptional. But this isn't a good situation, and they need to get involved somehow to get a guy that they need to get better. It was good they played Drummond a little bit more last night. They were more competitive when he was on the floor.
Yeah, I think that it might be a thing of just, like, Frank has to kind of give up on the season already and just go to developing Drummond. I mean, I look at that roster and I don't see a ton of talent. I see a lot of guys I like, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're talented. And especially with Stuckey struggling so much. I mean, he shot 4% heading into last night's game. 4%, like, that's astoundingly bad through any stretch of pro basketball. And I think he went something like 5 for 17 or something along those lines, which skyrocketed his percentage. He's not playing well. Brandon Knight's not really playing well. I don't know what to make of anybody else on the wing for them. It's, I like Jonas Derebko, and he should probably play a lot, especially over Tayshaun Prince at this point. But would that really make them more competitive, or would they just make them more enjoyable?
I think that I'm a big believer in Drebko, and I think that he should honestly get a lot more opportunities. I think that you can put him in the high post and good things are going to happen for you. You know, I like Brandon Knight. I think Knight's situation where he's having to start, and I think that's the tough perform. I think that if he was one of those guys that was coming off the bench, I kind of see a little bit of Devin Harris there, where it's like if he was backing up a veteran, he could be like, oh man, Brandon Knight, look how good Brandon Knight is. But because he's not, like, I think that's kind of, you know, causing a lot of problems. Stuckey's a huge part of their offense, and him being missing is seriously causing problems. It's one where, and they don't even, here's the really weird part though, like on the board last night in the locker room, like, one of their big things was get the ball in the post. Like, let's get the ball in the post. And Monroe wound up with 20 shots, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, he had 10, that's really good. You know, he had 27 and 10. That's a pretty great night with three blocks. I mean, Greg Monroe played well, but you still want to see them do more. Like, a Pistons beat writer actually mentioned during the game, you know, a play in which, you know, Tayshaun kind of gets the ball at the wing, and Monroe's there, and he's got position, and he just takes a contested three.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? You know, and their backup guards kind of do the same thing. Offensively, all of their guys are kind of doing their own thing. And that's going to cause problems. You got to have everybody working towards the objective and not just kind of feeling out what you want to do.
That's the thing. I look at when I watch them, it doesn't even look like they're running an offense.
Yeah. There's times when they happen to rotate, they happen to get ball movement, and they'll create an open three, and you're like, there, that, do that more. But then they go back to the same stuff.
Moving across to another team in the Central Division, this is something I really, really liked from the other night, and something that really frustrated me is Chris Paul apparently told Byron Scott during the game to have Kyrie Irving guard him. Because what happened is, which I found interesting too, it was a little hypocritical because Chris Paul wasn't guarding Kyrie Irving for much of the second half. He had Eric Bledsoe on him because Eric Bledsoe was doing an awesome job on him. And the Cavs had Alonzo G on him, on Chris Paul. Apparently told Byron Scott, hey, you threw me in the fire, had me guard all those guys, make Kyrie guard me, because he wanted to go at the rookie, because it probably was a lot easier than going at Alonzo G. And it made me think, like, the game was fun, but you do want to see those matchups of the stars going at each other. We got that in the finals quite a bit last year with Durant and LeBron, but we don't get that often because this just isn't a one-on-one league anymore. You know, despite the no hand check rules and a lot of 1-4 flat, because of help defense, there's just not a ton of real one-on-one play like we used to see when there wasn't help defense, like in the 90s, where you could isolate against a guy and just go at him. And it would take a while for the help defense to get there. I wonder if the schematics of it all takes away from drama, from like that real star-studded mano-a-mano drama, and we get probably much better basketball out of it. But does it take away from the entertainment on some level?
I definitely think it does. I definitely think that, you know, people would prefer, they want to see Kobe guarding LeBron. They want to see LeBron guarding Kevin Durant, which that does happen. They want to see, you know, you want to see somebody step up and really guard the guy and see who's better, you know.
Right.
But the problem is like, that's a really weird statement because there are just not a lot of players who are great offensively and defensively.
Right.
It's pretty much LeBron. Like, Kevin Durant might get there, but he's got a long way to go. Kobe Bryant for years has been overrated in terms of what he can do. He's a good defender. It's just that Kobe Bryant is not lock you down. He's not Jordan. Jordan was on, like, I actually, not being a huge Jordan fan, like, I actually went back online and watched some stuff that I could see on YouTube and wherever I could find it, and then, like, made it a point to catch on NBA TV or ESPN Classic to just start watching his defense. Good God, that guy could ball hawk. I mean,
he was angry. It was
really
angry.
Incredible how much really? He got under guys and just really was able to control them. And there are just not a lot of guys that can do that. And it's also, you know, I think a lot of it is just the functions of physics too, because guys have gotten so much faster. I mean, this is to me, this is the fastest point guard like crop we've ever seen. I mean, the speed is unfathomable. This is incredible athleticism, and you're almost never going to find anyone that can move laterally as fast as somebody can move, you know, when they've got the ball going straight line. So it's just not possible. The human body can't move that way. So you have to have help defense, and that's just, you know, part of it. I think I've said this in the past, like, it's one of the things with the Celtics is I always talk about the Celtics killing fun, and Chicago's the same way with their defense. Like, they kill fun because they don't just help at the rim. They help at, four different points. Like, if Kyrie Irving is attacking, Irving has to get past Rondo. He's got to avoid the swipe from the wing, the first help defender, and then the second one. Like, there's just no way to be able to – it's very – and that's one of the reasons I think that we don't see those, you know, terrific scoring nights much anymore is
– just too much noise in front of an offensive player.
If you just – yeah, I mean, if you distract a guy once, it's hard to adjust. If you distract him four times, you know, everything changes. So it's really difficult. And I just think that it would be great to see, I think, some of the one-on-one stuff. I mean, but part of that is, you know, we also think we missed that because – that used to happen in the post, and that's gone too because there just aren't many, many great post players.
Well, I don't even know that it's not that there aren't many great post players, it's that the game doesn't allow it.
I mean, I don't know. I think you can still, like, guys are big enough. You can still get them. And if the biggest problem, I think, is handle. You know, if you can still get the guy in the block, if he can dribble through the handle, he can still, you know, take. You can basically, and if you got good enough shooters, you can force them to stay home. Like, it'll be interesting to see with the Lakers, like, you know, because eventually it's going to come down to, well, no, not eventually, if Mike Brown decides to do this, it's going to come down to, like, forcing that issue of, okay, they got the ball down to Howard, are you going to double? Because if you double and he passes it out, you're screwed. What are you going to do?
I feel like, I mean, with Dwight Howard, you know, people knock his game or whatever, but he can still put up 30, 40 points fairly easy against a single cover. But isn't that how you want to play him? I mean, you know, this has been widely discussed before, but like I would give up 40 points to Dwight Howard if it means the shooters don't get much on the outside.
The Atlanta plan.
Yeah, it's the Atlanta plan. And really Boston did it too for a while, just single coverage with Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, but see, that didn't work out as well for them because they didn't do a good enough job on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of that game seven because of the 45. But I will say this, though. I think people you have to be able to appreciate different things and get out of your mindset of, like, oh, I miss when this used to happen. Like, yeah, it was great when he was one-on-one. But watching Andre Iguodala or Luol Deng switch on defense is so amazing. Like, the way that they're able to rotate from guy to guy to guy, they always know where they're going and what they need to do. They almost never lose their man. And the fact that they're able to rotate on those, like, switch on those pick and rolls and be like, all right, I'm guarding the point guard, and I'm now guarding a power forward in the post. Okay, now I'm switching back and rotate. Like, it's really amazing to watch. And, you know, if you watch the game enough, you learn what really is beautiful defense. And it's something to really behold. It's not as exciting because our natural reaction is to want buckets,
but muskets.
Buskets, but it doesn't. You know, if you're able to watch it, like watching Miami, Chicago, Boston, and a few others when they really want to rotate, it's a beautiful thing to see guys moving in tandem like that.
I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I was thinking about the Timberwolves and like, what do I want to see out of the Timberwolves this year? One, healthy stars would be great. Two, I was thinking, okay, this team is set up to be a very good offensive team when everyone comes back, but wouldn't it be kind of fun to root for the 2004 Pistons or the 2005 Spurs? Just a team that you can say, look, we may not score on defense, but we know you're not going to score. And just, like, I've never rooted for just a defensive, like a ridiculously defensive-minded team that just grinds out wins and stops. And I'm sure after a while it gets old in terms of, you know, watchability. But I think you end up taking a certain pride in the concept of defense, the concept of shutting down the opponent. And really winning never gets old, but maybe that way of winning kind of wears on you a little bit. But, you know, I just think it would be fun for a year or two to like that team that nobody can score on.
Well, I think fans will come to, you know, a lot of this league is whatever their team is, that's what they should be doing. Spurs fans are hilarious because they're basically like, no, this team is great because of its offense. Look how great the offense is. And I'm like, yeah, but you used to make fun of the Suns because they were great offensively and they couldn't defend in the playoffs. Like,
yeah.
But now this is cool. Like, come on. But two, for me, it's, as a Memphis fan, it's kind of interesting because I really like watching Memphis, despite how I may seem on Twitter. I really like watching Memphis because I love the frenetic style. Because I grew up in Arkansas, so I grew up watching 40 Minutes of Hell.
Yeah.
So the idea of this team that gets, and I don't at all want to see them run the press, but in the NBA, to see guys, this, and it's, I've really been fascinated with this over the last 2 years. It used to be, if you gamble on defense, you were just trying to fake it. Like, it's like fake defense. Like, oh, yeah, you can only do that for – it's, and the NFL is kind of the same way. You can't rely on turnovers because eventually you're going to face a team that doesn't turn the ball over, and then you're screwed. And the idea was in the NBA, you couldn't do that either. You've got to defend, and you got to put them to low percentage positions and then contest the shot. But the Grizzlies very much are kind of changing that, and there's a few other teams. And Miami even – has elements of this. They're so good all over. They do both. But Miami, one of its strengths is they get in the passing lanes and they force turnovers. They pressure the ball and they force turnovers and they convert those into transition buckets. And so you're seeing that more and more with teams using their athleticism to be like, all right, let's create havoc and then get them out of their rhythm offensively by challenging everything and gambling a little bit and get up and down the floor, and that'll create easier buckets for us when we have a bad offense. You know, because the Grizzlies' offense is not good. It is not good in any real way. They have good offensive players. Zach Randolph is a good offensive player. Marc Gasol is a good offensive player. Rudy Gay is a pretty good offensive player. You know, Mike Conley is becoming a really good shooter, and he's a good passer and a great game manager. But they don't have, like, they don't have James Harden, I think, is one way to put it, honestly. They don't have that guy to just make things happen.
If only they could have drafted him.
I hate you.
So no, much. But I think that what you say has a lot of validity. It especially the Memphis style, it's let's start a riot on the perimeter.
Yep.
Like, let's start looting, let's start pillaging, like, let's just start a riot out there. And, you know, it helps having Marc Gasol back there and Rudy Gay to be able to cut off lanes and if your gamble loses. But just having that knowledge, especially having that knowledge as an offensive player, dribbling into the half court knowing I'm going to get hounded for the next 2 hours and I have to be – I mean, that ends up being mentally exhausting, knowing that you have to be so conscientious of every little movement. And that's what the Grizzlies do, and that's why they're successful, is because you can really wear down an opponent's backcourt like that.
Yeah, and the cumulative effort, the war of attrition, really does tend to get to him. And you know, especially when you're getting the ball out of the point guard's hands because he's just like, I can't handle this pressure, not like, you know, mentally, but you know, I gotta get the ball out of this corner. You know, then your offense, you basically whoever he throws it to is like, now what? And that wastes another 2.5 seconds. That's the thing that you tend to see with the pressure. Even if you don't get the turnover, if you can force a 24-second violation because the offense is screwed up, then you've got a really good chance. But to me, I will say, like, that can only take you so far.
Sure. Oh, sure.
You'd have to be so good. Like, this thing with 40 Minutes of Hell, like, you have to be so good that it just overwhelms, and you have to get just the right matchups. And, like, there's only, like, I can't imagine winning a title that way because too many things would have to go right.
You have to have Corliss Williamson.
Yeah, so.
And he retired.
You know, yeah, exactly. He's not available at the moment. So. It's hard to see that happening. But, you know, getting back to your original point, I think it would be great to see one-on-one. And you wonder, you know, maybe that's one of the biggest reasons that people kind of knock on the offensive talent in the league compared to days gone by, is because, you know, the guys have to face a lot harder coverage. It's not to say that anybody in this generation is as good as some of the guys in the other one in the past. But I do think that there are players that if you were to put them in kind of those, I can just take my guy one-on-one, would be really phenomenal.
Yeah, and I almost think, like, comparing at least this generation to maybe like the early 90s when it was so physical, I wonder how many guys would take the physical beating over the mental exhaustion of having to be so aware of every scheme around you. You know, I personally would rather take a physical beating than be mentally exhausted. I don't know how many people, you know, I don't know how widely accepted that is, but I think a lot of people would be that way of, you know, the whole, I watched the last 45 minutes of Roadhouse this morning. You know, the whole idea of pain don't hurt is probably easier than, oh my God, this, you know, these guys are going to be all over me. This guy's in the way. You know, I think there's a real toll that can be taken mentally for months and months and months of that kind of pressure against you rather than physically, you know, bruises heal and you can become numb to the pain at some point. You know, I wonder how many guys would choose the physical over the mental.
Monty Williams would. One guy, you know, the physical thing I always get curious about because I'm like, well, look, yeah, they could play you a lot tougher, but you have a really good chance now that when you get into the lane, you're going to, if you can duck, you know, Kurt Thomas and get by him, Tyson Chandler's going to be there. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that it becomes the really great defensive teams are really hard to play against because you're just like, I am going to get the crap beaten out of me by driving inside all the time. It's why, you know, and there's such a toll on the career, too. Dwayne Wade is like the biggest example of this.
Like, yeah.
You know, Mavericks fans, just go ahead and get the grumbling out the way about 2006. But one of the things that I always noted in that 2006 finals is there were calls, yeah, but man, Wade is fantastic at drawing contact. He always has been. He is fantastic. I think it's one of the reasons that he struggles so much now is that he draws contact, and when he doesn't get that call and he doesn't get the call as much as he used to, like he's just befuddled.
Yeah.
And so that causes a lot of the problems.
He doesn't have like an instant plan B.
Let's make a very direct transition here. Is Danny Granger, when healthy, one of those guys that would be better if he was in a one-on-one situation?
Oh, well, speaking of him being healthy, he's not. because he just went to Dr. James Andrews, got an injection in his left knee, and he is going to be out for like 3 months, which puts him right around the All-Star break. I would assume you wouldn't play him before the All-Star break, give him that extra rest, and that means he's missing 53 games to start the season if all that happens in that timeline. Yeah, I guess that's a guy that would have been better off playing one-on-one than getting banged up against all these guys swarming at him. I just, you know, Paul George has looked good in a lot of areas of the game so far this year, but scoring the ball, he's shooting 40%. He's hitting 33% of his threes. Like, he hasn't figured that out yet. And he probably can. And that's, you know, something that comes with experience. And he'll probably figure it out at some point. He's got a couple of months to do it now. But Zach Lowe mentioned on Twitter that Indiana's pick and roll without Granger and without Collison compared to last year, it's really rough.
That's one of the things that... It's like, I really thought the Pacers were going to be the second best team in the East. I was prepared to stand by that. And now, like, this is just completely collapsing because the Collison trade worried me. I was like, but you're losing so much on offense. And now it's disastrous because you don't have a guy that you can just look to and be like, well, maybe we can get this guy to get loose. You right. just don't have that. Like, West is going to score consistently for you, and that's awesome. It would also be nice if he had a good pick and pop point guard like Darren Collison to work with. You know, Roy Hibbert is going to do a good job for you, but he's not going to score 40 for you. And so, like, they don't have any guy on that roster that I think has a good chance of being able to score 40 points. And that's like, you know, we talked about how hard that is in general, but, you know, you're looking for, okay, well, there's a 35% chance. I don't think that there's a guy above maybe 10%. Of anybody that can do that, and most guys in the league have a 10% chance of being able to score 40 because they're the best athletes in the world. But I really, this is terrifying for Indiana, I think. You know, as much as everyone's like, you know, questions Granger, people kind of lose sight of this. Granger cannot be the elite player that the straw man argument would make him out to be and still be a huge loss for this team because you take away that threat and the defense entirely shifts.
Yeah, and, you know, I've started wondering about this since the Carmelo backlash of, well, isn't the idea of like a focal point for the defense to really center around, you know, maybe that means as much as a guy not being an all-around player or not being efficient or whatever. And Danny Granger is that guy. Like, people around the league think he can score. Whether he can score as well as he used to doesn't matter. They think he can. And they're going to throw that defensive focus at him, and that opens everything up for everybody else. And now they don't have that. Is the league going to respect Paul George in the same way? No, not even close. Do they respect David West? Yes, but it's not the same type of deal. Like, you're cutting down the floor with David West from 18 feet in. With Granger, you had to worry about 25 feet in.
You go from, let's use Danny Granger to distract the defense and find Paul George an open look, to let's try and let Paul George create an open look. And
don't worry, he's got Lance Stephenson on the wing for him.
Yeah, and that's just a dramatic, that's a really dramatic change, and that's just not, you know, that's really poor. And again, I think West tends to do this. When things get tough, like, West improves. Like, he does whatever he needs to. If you can get him the defense, he'll keep you scoring-wise in and enough. But the other thing is, I mean, West has injury concerns, and he's getting older. And this hurts them long-term, too, because part of it is they need West to not have a huge year so they can justify not re-signing him, and now he's going to probably have a huge year.
I wonder if it's a thing where you can slow it down and use Roy Hibbert a lot more. I mean, he's been a little rough to start the season. I think he's only like 8.6 points per game and shooting like 46% from the field. But is that something where maybe you slow down, you do a high-low game with him and West, and you just pound the ball? And even if Hibbert ends up with 4 or 5 turnovers a game, it's the idea of just bully everybody, because that's how they won last year. I mean, they had Granger as the focal point, but they just bullied everybody. And I don't get that same sense from them this year, even though it's only a weekend. It just is a different team.
The problem, I think, with that concept is mostly foul trouble. That's the biggest thing with Hibbert. Like, people kind of get lost on that. Hibbert's big problem is that he winds up in foul trouble. And
yeah.
Then, you know, because teams go at him because they need to get him out. And they don't have, you know, and with that being the problem, you know, without them having, and that's one of the things with West, is West works really hard, but he's just not physically gifted in terms of defense and, you know, in size or ability. And so what ends up happening is, you know, Hibbert's really the guy that they target, and then he gets in foul trouble, and then you're sunk. An example, like, here's where they're at. They are, you know, through 4 games, it's just 4 games, but through 4 games, they have the third West offensive rating in the league. The only team that has a worse both offense and defense is the Washington Wizards. That's the only team.
Yikes.
The Kings actually have a better defense right now than the Pacers.
Yikes.
And the Kings have a worse offense, but they have a better defense. So, like, that's, you know, they're minus 5.2 in net rating, and that's a concern. that's not good.
That's not a sustainable model.
By Rohan Kraif's +6, you know, metric, that means that there are 11 points. The guy improved by 11 points per 100 possessions on average to get to where they need to go, and that's a long ways away.
That's a lot that's a lot of Lance Stephenson threes.
It's a lot of Lance Stephenson threes. So, you know, if I'm Donnie Walsh, like, I'd be looking for an early season trade. I would be looking to package some guys, because I don't know that they can afford to kind of waste this year with the kind of construct that they have, and they need to be looking to try and get something. There's not a lot out there to get, but they need to be at least be looking at it.
Let's look at tonight's games real quick before we cut this off. 13 games on the schedule.
Woo-hoo!
That's a lot of games. Pacers at Hawks. No Granger. Josh Smith is questionable. You know, that's one of those games where the playoff games or the playoff teams playing each other in the regular season. Even early in the season, those games fascinate me, not for what we'll learn about a playoff matchup, but it just, you know, obviously every game affects the standings, but that could mean the difference between a fourth seed and a seventh seed. You know, just those little things here and there. And seeing that game is a lot more important than you would assume a week into the season.
Here's the thing, like, I'm already, like, predicting, like, I'm already looking at this, and I'm like, So I'm going to go heavy on the Hawks, and then the Pacers are going to win, and it's going to be one of those things where I'm just like, oh, God, why is the NBA so random? Like, I can just already tell.
Right.
Because all signs, you know, point, you know, Jeff Teague's playing really well. They're going to probably get Josh Smith back. Al Horford should be able to do really great work on David West. Zaza Pachulia can cover Hibbert. They've got, you know, they've got good wing players. They've got shooters to be able to force Indiana's rotations to get out of sync. Like, there's every reason to think the Hawks will be able to win this game. And, of course, like, the Hawks will lose, not because we never trust the Hawks necessarily, but just because that's how the NBA works. But, yeah, I think it'll be, you know, and maybe, but, I mean, here's the thing, is we're questioning what the Pacers can do. But a lot of times, you know, with a really good, somebody will find a weapon. Somebody will step up. And you think it's going to be Hibbert? Maybe George Hill will be the guy that they want him to be. You know, I'm not big on that idea, but maybe that's the answer.
James Harden is going to hold court against the Denver Nuggets. Your Denver Nuggets.
My Denver
Nuggets? Your hometown Denver Nuggets.
My home Denver Nuggets. Well, they're actually 40 minutes south of me, so it's not technically my hometown. My nearby Denver Nuggets.
Your suburban Denver Nuggets.
They're going to put Iguodala on him. They've already said that they're going to put Iguodala on him. Carl's already said that he's going to start Iguodala, and that's the first assignment he's going to have. And that'll be interesting, because Iguodala's a big guy. So
that's going to be fun. I love it when Iggy can just lock in, play that what I like to call that bath salt defense, and just eat the other guy's face. Like, he's just having his defensive talent against Harden's offensive ability, like, that's just a fun matchup.
Couple things. It's going to be fast. Harden's got a good chance to score high again because it's going to be a fast-paced game. Even if he's not necessarily as efficient as he has been. One thing, though, you know, Iguodala is responsible a lot for their rebounding, and so there's a good opportunity. One thing Harden does is he's leaking out really fast.
Yeah.
He's getting out there, and so that's the best way to kind of get past the Iggy problem. You want to know who I'm actually more excited about than Iggy Harden is Corey Brewer Harden. That's a really good matchup from an ability standpoint. You know, Harden will win that matchup most likely, but Brewer's a really good ball player, really good at swiping and you know, taking out and getting in passing lanes. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
What about?
I really like that wing pairing defensively for the Nuggets. They're starting to really show it too. Brewer and Iguodala are doing pretty well. And it'll be interesting because let's see that'll put who's the shooting guard for the Rockets now?
Well, James Harden.
Right. So Chandler Parsons at the wing. So that'll be Gallo versus Chandler Parsons.
That could be fun.
That's going to be fun. You've got Omer Asik versus JaVale McGee or Kostakoufos.
Asik's defensive fundamentals against JaVale McGee's, you know, go-go gadget helicopter arms is going to be a lot of fun.
The Nuggets' propensity for driving getting the rim versus Asik's going to be interesting. Foul calls, man, determining that one. That's going to be a big thing to watch because if you can make the Nuggets suffer at the rim, then that's really when their offense starts to unravel.
And Asik is just so – it's amazing how it's almost every time he is standing straight up challenging shots. I mean, that is a really underrated skill. You see a lot of guys hang their arms over the defender, get called for foul, start complaining, but he is just always straight up.
And then Jeremy Lin, Ty Lawson. That one should be a lot of fun. I think that'll be a really good matchup. It should be really fast paced and a lot of fun to watch. That one's let's see.
Lakers at Jazz. Both teams 1-3.
Jazz fans started off and were really confident, and man, it has eroded.
They've looked better on the road before. Before the season, I would say they've just had a couple of tough ones.
Yeah, it'll be. I tend to think that the Lakers probably have solved a few things, and the Jazz don't have anyone to even throw at Howard really. And Kobe loves playing in that building. I tend to think that the Lakers are probably going to control this one. The Jazz have been pesky though. The Jazz have been pesky with them, so maybe. Maybe this one will turn into a competitive one. Spurs, Clippers, it's supposed to be this really good matchup. I just don't think – I think it's less about talent or the quality of the team as I do think it's about just how the matchups go. However, that you know, the Clippers really need to win this one because it's going to be three straight if they fall to San Antonio.
And that's going up against a one that could be really, really fun, Cavs at Warriors.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give the Cavs like 20, 30 games before I start buying into this idea that they're actually going to be there.
No, they're not going to be there. They're not that good. They're just fun to watch.
I don't even know if they're going to be that fun to watch. I mean, here's my thing with the Deion Waiters thing. I don't look at the results are fun, like, oh, that's awesome, he hit those threes, but so many of Waiters' threes were contesting. Like,
a lot of bad shots.
They weren't good shots, it just fell. And I'm not trying to bag on Waiters. Like, he's got a really bright future in this league because he's big and physical and really talented and he's got good he's got great athleticism. I'm just like, I don't know if that game is really what you. I also worry because it's like, man, if you give a guy with those kind of instincts that kind of a game, that can breed bad habits, and that's what you don't want. You don't want those kind of bad habits. But I think it'll be interesting. Golden State's still trying to figure itself out. They're still trying to understand kind of what they're doing. They're still trying to get Bogut bigger minutes. I think losing Brandon Rush is pretty big for them because it means Barnes has to take over a huge role. So that'll be kind of interesting. But by the way, how about Alonzo G's defense the other night?
Yeah, he was decent last year and then took his decent season into free agency. Really expecting a lot, didn't get what he wanted, and he was really bad the first couple games. And he was a defense. If he can just play, be their defensive guy and finish at the rim, he can be a really good rotation player.
The Cavs are thin. Tyler Zeller's out, so they're going to be.
He took an elbow, right?
Carl Landry's played his face off. So
yeah. Before we go, I got to ask you for a prediction: Big Baby versus Pekovic tonight. What is the result of this potential hilarity?
God, Drunken Seal versus the madman.
The Pexecutioner.
The Pexecutioner. Wow.
Big Baby, he had a rough one last night. He was like 7 of 22, got blocked 4 or 5 times. He's actually, Tom Haberstroh tweeted, he's getting blocked 4.3 times a game this season. And it's only a week, but that's a lot.
You and I talked about Orlando. Like, I think we're probably finding out a little bit. The last night was probably the start of finding out a little bit. And now they're gonna be on the back. They're gonna be on a road back to back. Sacababa on the road. So that's. I tend to think that probably we're gonna find out a little bit more about who the Magic are. Now, again, that said, maybe we'll have the same thing with the Pacers. Like, it'll just be random. But that's gonna be interesting. I have one for you before we go.
Yeah.
Pistons, Kings.
My prediction is probably somewhere between 4 and 5 alcoholic drinks to make it tolerable. Maybe Andre Drummond gets loose. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins punches a guy. Maybe Tyreek Euro steps all over everybody. Those could make it watchable.
I got a few things for you to watch out now. One, Detroit's on a back-to-back, a dual road back-to-back. The schedule for the Pistons is mean. I mean, I looked at it, and this is like one of their most winnable games to start this year of the first like 8, and it's a road second game of a back to back. So, I think it'll be interesting to see. The other thing, Drummond last night was pushing and nudging and shoving and like swiping like off ball at JaVale McGee. Like it was getting testy. So I'm kind of like, ooh, is Drummond one of those guys? Is he all fired up? Like, because if him and Cousins on the same floor, there could be fireworks. That could be exciting.
Yeah, a frustrated night followed up by a night against DeMarcus Cousins. That game might be leading off SportsCenter for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's definitely one to keep an eye on. Plus, you got the Kings backcourt versus the Pistons backcourt, and you've got. Oh man, yeah. Wow, this is gonna be. This is definitely gonna be a drinking game kind of game.
And you can read about all of the coverage from tonight's games on Ion Basketball Blog. That's gonna do it for today, Matt Bohr. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zach.
That's all for the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. For Matt Bohr, I'm Zach Harper. Talk to you tomorrow.